Everyone's here for a reason, right? Or for that matter, everyone comes in and out of our lives for the same reason. We're all a lesson for ourselves and for each other. I find it very easy to dismiss one another, especially when the interaction is brief or what appears to be meaningless. But if I've learned anything, it's that we're presented with lessons constantly. Now, whether or not you choose to see it, or if you choose not to accept a deeper meaning, that's up to you. It's very easy to overlook the messages we're sent simply based on from where they originate, or if they are disguised and it's up to you to decipher. Take me, for example. For the longest time, I worried about my purpose. Why was I allowed to live through this shit? What was it about me that saw me through to the other side? Now I'm convinced that I made it through the fire so that I can go back in and save some of those still trapped by the flame. I've also been fortunate enough to see through to the core of my messages. I've been gifted with the ability of hindsight, I guess. I've also, probably due to age, been provided clarity. Clarity to see past the insanity and the madness through to the message and my purpose. I've also been fortunate enough to realize that sometimes I'm a player in my own life and sometimes I'm a player in someone else's. And that's helped me overcome the why me stage and instead see through to the I know why portion of this adventure. So I encourage you not to take interactions for granted, regardless of how brief. There are messages and lessons being presented to you constantly, and sometimes you are the message. My name is Jason Farias, and this is my Madness Method.
Hey yo, it's still when I'm heated, how my heart stay cold. Ride around and make the gas around the map explode. Now behold the burning malice of a treacherous soul. First time I shot a gun, dude, I was 12 years old. But since then,
when I said to record these episodes, it's not that I hit record and start reading from a script. I've never done that. I've always considered where I left off in the last and think about what occurred next. And I just kind of reflect on what that felt like and who was there and try to figure out at what point I want to start. I've always found that telling my story, if it was scripted, would be disingenuine. You know, I want to tell it honestly and with all the respect that it deserves. Okay, but I feel like if I was to sit down and I was to type this out, you would hear that this is scripted. And the problem when you start scripting stuff is you'll start adding detail for the benefit of the story. And that might take it outside the reality of the story. Because here's the thing, in the dope game, and knowing that I was under the influence of God knows what, certainly meth, probably alcohol, maybe a little bit of weed, you know, things get skewed. And I think it's important that as I tell this story, I tell it from a place of honesty. And I realize that sometimes that causes the story to be a little choppy or a little jumbled, but I also feel like that's important for the story. You know, it's important for me to admit things get cloudy in certain spots. Like, I'm amazed on how much of this I actually remember. You know, when I first sat down to tell this entire story, I was like, man, dude, am I really going to be able to convey everything that happened to try to show people that this really did occur? You know, and then as I start talking, I'm like, whoa, you know what? Like, sometimes I'm as fascinated as you might be. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And I think that that's important. That I keep it from being scripted because it allows me to venture into the story and it allows memories to come to the surface while I'm telling it. And I hope you don't mind where it gets choppy and bounces around a little bit because the details I feel like are important, but when they come up, they're real. And I find that scripting will take me away from that. And the reason why I even bring that up and I lead off in this time is my reflection this past week or so. Admittedly, has me looking at all the individual characters that have ever been in this story and how quickly they've come in and out. You know, I refer to these people as friends, but there are some of these people that have only been in my life for 4, 6, 8 weeks. All of Vegas, this whole story that we're in right now, from the time I got there until the time we eventually wrap up this piece, is only like 2 years. You know, it's this reflection that's even caused me in some instances when I've skipped a week. And I don't know, those of you that listen regularly will notice that there are weeks that there hasn't been an episode. And sometimes it's because I get caught in the reflection and there's an anxiety that exists in it. And sometimes it makes it real tough to tell this story. But again, this week's thought process has me realizing I don't know that any of these people were ever really my friends. I find it interesting that I'll refer to them that way. And the lessons that they brought me in life and the things that they've taught me about myself, about people in general, how easy I think we throw the word friend around. But this one really got me reflecting on how insanely quick Hero and I became friends, but then also how insanely quick he left the story. You know, from the time he and I met to the night I got him some crack to going to the win and into this story that I want to tell you right now, we're talking about an 8 to 10 week span. You know, he saved Cindy from whatever Saeed was planning that night. And again, I don't know what happened. All I know is I got to the hotel, or excuse me, I got back to Harbor Island at our apartment, and Saeed wasn't there. Hero was already there. You know, the guys that brought me are obviously there. But that night sort of fizzled out and was never discussed again. And, you know, Hero and I hung out a few times after that. And that night never came up. It was almost like it was just business as usual, that people always get picked up in SUVs with people with automatic weapons to be protected. And, you know, it's just commonplace in these people's lives to have cleared an entire complex and made people go into their homes. And me just being the goofy fucking dummy that I am, I'm just like, okay, yeah, this is normal. And I keep it moving. But let me get into the last night that I saw Hero. Now, I didn't know this was going to be the last night, but he showed up. I'm guessing it was probably 5 or 6 days after the Saeed issue. And Hero shows up and he knocks on the door, and I open up, and I didn't know he was coming, but he was never one that needed to announce himself that he was on his way. He was always welcome at my house. And I opened the door and I was pretty excited to see him. I was like, "Hey, what's up, man?" And he was more serious this time. Usually he smiles, "What's up, man?" He's already fucked up or whatever, or he's ready to get fucked up or ready to go out. But this time he was way more serious, and he was dressed very nicely. Almost like, if you could imagine, like, let's say we got all dressed up that night we went to the Wynn, right? But it was the end of the night, so he didn't have his jacket on and his shirt was unbuttoned, but he was still dressed very nicely. And again, I don't ask questions, so I didn't ask where you've been, what you're doing, what's going on. I felt the vibe from him and realized something's off. And he came in and he sat down and he had a box with him. He was like, "Hey, man, you got a minute? We need to talk." I was like, "Oh shit, we need to talk. Like, that's not what we do." But he sat me down. "Of course, man. Yeah, fuck, we could talk, dude. What's up? What's going on?" Like, I thought he was in trouble this time. And I'm like, "Fuck, man, I kind of owe this guy. I wonder what I'm about to get into." But he just started explaining to me. He goes, "You're a good dude, man." And I was like, "Oh shit, are you dying?" And he said, "I don't think you realize the position you're in around here." He's started telling me, "You know, look, you have somehow managed to retain a good time and friends and people that trust you and that you trust, and I think it's time you start paying better attention to your surroundings." He goes, "I'm not telling you that anything's like going on. Nothing, not like there's nothing I'm protecting you from here, but what I'm observing is you're not understanding exactly how important you are to the game in this area." And I was like, "What? Important? Like, I'm not important. You know what I mean? I'm just a fucking dope dealer." And it wasn't that he was saying like I'm some fucking public figure or anything like that. He was just saying the amount of dope I'm moving, the amount of money that it's exchanging hands, like I'm not respecting my position, which is interesting because I kind of thought I was. You know, like I was never like, I don't want to be that guy that, oh, I never go anywhere and I leave with protection and all this shit. To him, it was a concern because he was seeing the money, he was seeing the drugs. And to him, he wanted to know that I was safe, especially after the Saeed thing, right? So he needed to know that I was protecting myself. And the one thing that he knew about me is that I was never carrying a gun. It's just not, It's just not in me. Even back in California, when I had guns, right? I left them places. I didn't run around with guns. It just that's not who I was. The only reason I even had guns is because, like, that's what the rules say, right? That's what the movies tell you and the music tells you. But that's not who I am. I'm not a gun-toting crazy person. But that's when he went into a few rules. It's very interesting when you talk to people and they have like these rules that they want to instill on you, right? So check these out. These are the new rules that I got from Hero. Now, mind you, Hero's probably playing in a part of the game that's way more elevated than the people I had previous. So I was really curious. And he started pointing out, like, look, dude, there's some things, at least in Vegas, and at least at the level you're playing around at, there's some things that you need to remember. And this is when he turned the box, and the box, it was just a cardboard box, and he opened it, and then it was a little case. And he opened the case, and there was a brand new gun in it. It was a revolver. And he said, one, you should always have this on you. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that, but I'm listening. And he said, you never use the same gun twice. And I was like, oh, yeah? Who's got it like that? You know? And he just laughed and he goes, you need to have it like that. And I was like, what the fuck is going on, man? What has he heard? And like I was insistent, even though that he assured me that he's heard nothing and he's not there for anything specific, like the tone of this was like very dark. And I began to get concerned, so I started smoking some dope, right? There's nothing better to run from your problems than doing some drugs. And then he starts getting into carry a revolver on your person. He said, so you never leave shells behind. You never leave shells behind. That's how you get caught. He said, if six bullets isn't enough to handle any situation, you probably have a bigger problem on your hand. He said, and also, if you have to spray with an automatic weapon, you're probably not close enough to your problem, or you're not as mad as you think. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, is this guy? And now I'm like, fuck, are you a hitman? Are these hitman rules? Like, what the fuck is happening here? So don't use the same gun twice. Don't ever leave shells behind, which I'll be honest with you, like the don't leave shells behind thing, that's always got me. You know what I mean? You watch the news and they're like, oh, there was 30 shells left behind. You're like, there's 30 chances to get caught, you stupid son of a bitch. So the revolver thing made sense to me. But it was the if six bullets isn't enough. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, bro, if you have a problem, a real gangster gets up close. And I was like, oh shit. He's like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Dude, if these guys running around and just spraying bullets into fucking crowds and shit, these are just guys that are trying to prove something to themselves. If somebody's done you dirty, you get up and close. I was like, whoa, bro. And he said it so matter of fact. It was almost as though he was concerned for me and needed me to know all this shit. Each one of these things are probably things we've all thought. Again, when you see things on the news of these shootings that happen, pick a major city, Detroit, Philly, Atlanta, wherever it is. You always hear about all these shells getting left behind. So that was almost like a no-brainer. That one's the one you think about when you see the news, like, ah, somebody's getting caught with that many shells left behind. But it was the up close and personal piece of it. You know, if you really got to handle your business, you don't need more than six bullets because you should be close. Now, when guys would come over to talk business, whether it was Dolly or Shade, you know, or really any of those guys, anybody, Cindy would go and excuse herself and go to the room and let me deal with business. And this time was no different. Cindy went into the room. She was in there while Hero and I were talking. And you know, after he had his conversation and brought me this gun, and I was like, yeah, man, thanks, dude. Like, I appreciate that. And I was like, you sure there's nothing? Like, he's like, nah, man, I just feel like you're not grasping who it is you are around here. And he was probably 100% right, dude, because I was no different in my head. I was still just the young, dumb kid trying to have a good time and maybe wasn't paying attention to my surroundings as well as I should have. So I take the gun and I'm like, you want to get high? You know, like that's my answer to everything. Hey, buddy, you want to get high? And he's, of course, I want to get high. All right, cool. So I take the gun. And I go into the bedroom and I'm like, hey, Cindy, look at what Hero gave me. She's all excited. Cindy grew up around guns. She loves this shit. I just kind of left her with it, asked her to put it in the safe, told her we were going to get lit. So that was kind of her green light that she could come out, like the seriousness was over. I didn't know if the seriousness was over, but like Hiro and the guys that came over, they knew if Cindy was in the room, the business discussions, at least to some degree, were over. So she comes out. Okay, so now I'm kind of letting Hiro know, all right, we're done talking about this, and we go to get loaded, and Hiro just keeps like he's constantly sort of, I don't want to say poking the bear, but like trying to drop knowledge on me. And this is still, I think about that night with some frequency, anytime I reflect on Vegas, of was he really trying to tell me something and couldn't say it, couldn't say it outwardly, but he had some information. And I don't really know, but the one thing that sticks out for me that night is him warning me about Shade. And he's like, I don't know that this guy's fucking snitching. I don't know that he's up to no good. I just know what I hear. And I think you should be careful. Cindy keyed into that quick. She would always kind of shoot a look to me when we were having conversation with people. And when we'd be sitting in a session and there'd be multiple people in the room, she would be listening to everybody, as would I. But you can't hear necessarily everything. And if she heard something that caught her ear, she'd give me a look. And even though at this moment it was just she, I, and Hiro in the room, she shot me that look like he's telling you something, dude. And so I listened. He didn't really go into a bunch of detail. He was just telling me to be careful about Shade. That night went on for 4, 6 hours. I don't know. It went on to the wee hours. And Hiro was like, all right, man, I got to get out of here. And I was like, all right, bro. Like, hey, thanks for the peace. Thanks for the advice. Thanks for getting loaded. You need anything? He was like, no, nah, I'm good. I was like, all right, man. And he left. And that was the last time I saw Hiro. I didn't know it was going to be the last time I saw Hiro, but it was. And after Hiro left, Cindy and I got to talking, and she's like, what do you think about, Shay? Do you think Dolly knows? Blah, blah, blah. And I, everybody's got a sketchy side to them, right? Like, we question everything about everybody. And so we sort of dismissed it, but we both made like a mental note to just keep our eyes out. And it's a good thing, too, because of 3 days, I think it was, after Hiro came by that night, Dolly and Shade came over. Dolly had texted me and say, yo, can we come through? I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And they came by, and as soon as Shade walked in, Cindy looked at me. Side note, dude, Cindy got a crazy fucking side to her. You know what I mean? Like, I was worried that she was gonna light fucking Shade up, I'll be honest with you. Because when he walked in and she looked at me, I kind of nodded, like, no. Don't say shit. Don't get loud with him. Like, just kick back. And so they came in, we started getting high, and usually Cindy goes to the room, and she did for a minute, but there was something telling her not to. Now, I didn't know that at the time. She had told me a little later, but this night was a little weird. She kept the bedroom door open, and she was in there, and we were in what was the little front room area, which was just a wall between us, and she could hear everything we were talking about. Both Dolly and Shade started talking about that they heard the cops were going to start coming through Harbor Island. And that's when Cindy walked out. And she never does that. She never walks out. And she was like trying to end the conversation. She didn't want me saying nothing. She didn't want me doing nothing. Like, she was on full alert by this point. The guys kept talking and she kept kind of interrupting, which again was very unusual. Shade wasn't doing as much talking as he usually does. And Dolly was doing all the talking. And usually it's opposite. You know what I mean? Dolly was the fucking quiet dude. And Shade would never shut the fuck up. But this time, Shade wasn't saying a lot. I wasn't paying attention to what Cindy was saying or trying to alert me to. I just wasn't paying attention to her. And it was getting her pissed. And so when she walked back towards the room, I was pulling the pipe up towards my face and I was getting ready to take my hit. And she walked by and she smacked the pipe and she went to smack it out of my hand. But the dope was all liquid and it sprayed out of the hole in the top and landed on my face. So now I've got molten meth melting on my face, right below my eye. And she walked into the room. Now I know that's not what she meant to do, but now I'm sitting in front of two business partners and my girl just smacked fucking hot dope into my face. And I knew it was an accident, but I told the guys, I was like, hey, you guys need to get the fuck out of here. And I kind of like made it sound like, I was about to do something to this chick. I would never, dude. I knew that it was an accident. I wasn't pleased about it. Don't get me wrong. It hurt like a motherfucker, dude. 'Cause see, here's the thing is you can't wipe it off. You're just wiping hot dope down your face. So I had to let it fucking solidify on my face to break it off. So I was kind of in a situation at the moment. Like after I shut the door, she just like went in on me. She's like, "What the fuck? These guys are sitting there talking this shit. You're not seeing that Shane's not talking." Like she's just all over me about not paying attention to what the fuck's going on. I'm just getting high and da-da-da. So she's getting pissed that I'm not paying attention. I was paying attention, but I'm trying to let them talk. So I get the dope broken off of my face. I now have a big old like chemical burn on my face. And I'm not in the greatest of moods. But Cindy starts rounding up everything. She's like, they're sitting there telling you the cops coming. Hero just got done telling us to watch out for Shade. We need to clean this apartment up. She's like, something's going wrong here. Now we cleaned up, we rounded up everything. Okay, we got the drugs, the money, we put it in the little safe, the guns in there. We call Joey. Joey comes by, picks up the safe, and I send him away, and I told him I'll meet him over at the suites. And right as we're like taking a last lap, Cindy goes, "You know what? Let me check one more spot." And I don't know what made her do this, but she went to where Shade was sitting. Now, Shade would always come in and sit in a chair. He'd always grab a chair from the little table. And like everybody kind of had their spot, right? Like Big Bang Theory. You know what I mean? It's Sheldon's spot. But Shade this time moved from the chair and went and sat down on the floor, leaned up against the couch. And sure as shit, dude, Cindy goes over there and lifts up the couch a little bit. And there was a loaded dope pipe under the couch. Wasn't my pipe. Wasn't her pipe. We don't leave pipes laying around like that. That's not how shit goes. So while I cannot prove that Shade put it there because I did not see it, I don't know how else that dope pipe could have gotten there. So now, if this motherfucker is snitching to people and snitching people out, but trying to play the role like he's not, so he's running around giving people heads up, okay, knowing that you're going to run around and clean up your mess, right? But yet this motherfucker left something behind that could have gotten me in trouble. And Cindy, fresh off throwing a chemical burn in my face, was smart enough to look where this dumb motherfucker was sitting and found that pipe. She might have saved my ass. Now, mind you, we didn't stick around, right? It's not like I was going to wait for the cops to show up. But the way the cops did show up was massively unexpected. Joey's got my dope. It's over at the suites. I know it's safe there with him. I know that I can function from there. And you know what? Here's the better thing. Maybe it's just better we're not at Harbor Island for a little bit. So I'm just going to post up with Joey over at the suites and just kind of operate from there. We shared with Joey what we thought happened. But at the same time, you don't go talking shit. Like I had no proof. I had no proof that Shade put that pipe there. Cops hadn't shown up. I wasn't gonna say who told me or who didn't tell me that Shade may or may not be snitching because I mean that's kind of snitching on your own, right? Like you don't want to tell some, oh yeah, this person said that person's snitching because in the dope game, people love to talk, right? So if I told Joey that Hero said Shade was snitching, and if that makes it all the way back, now I've created an issue between people that an issue, it's not my issue to create. It's my information to consume and absorb and do with as I see fit. So now I'm at the suites. Guess what? Getting high. Gotta get high. Now I'm stressed out and I got a burn on my face. That hurts. So I might as well throw some weed and some alcohol in with that. And I'm getting good and fucked up. And of course, you know, I mean, I still got to kind of keep things rolling. You know, I gotta keep business flowing. And I did. I got a call while I was over at the suites. And remember, the rule exists, dude. That's not my area. Like, okay, yeah, I've met Killahoe and Duck. You know what I mean? And I got Joey over here and KK that's running around in this area. But none of us have had the conversation of whether I'm okay to operate over here. So I'm not on my turf. So I can't go conducting business over there. But I did get a call from somebody that needed a little bit of dope, you know, and I mean, I got to keep the money flowing, got to keep the customers happy. And so I was like, you know what? It's a beautiful night. I'll walk over. I'm going to meet you at the Shell station, kind of by the freeway. And it's a little bit of a walk, but from Budget Suites, which is like Wynn Road, there's an underpass between Wynn Road and Valley View Boulevard. Okay. So instead of going under the overpass, okay, because the train passes over the road, you can walk sort of through the dirt over the tracks, and you walk and you wind up by this place called Residence, which is just another apartment complex. I don't know, it may be another pay by the week place, but the road that picks up there is where you drop onto. So again, leave the suites over the tracks over to where this residence place is, and ultimately you wind up kind of weaving your way along Tropicana Avenue until you get to Valley View. But right when I get over the tracks, now mind you, I have taken this walk a few times. You know, I mean, I've been hanging out over at the suites for a while, and it's not uncommon for me to go need to make a delivery. My delivery system at this time was actually a really cool. I had one of the big 24-ounce Rockstar cans, you know, with the twist off top, and only the top, maybe third of it, held fluid. And it had a false bottom, so I could fill dope in it underneath, but yet I could still walk around and drink my Rockstar or whatever it is I had in there, right? So it was a great stash spot. But I'm taking my walk, and I make it, you know, obviously out the suites, over the tracks, and right as I get over to the road by the residence, there's a cop sitting there, a cop car, and I thought nothing of it. You know, I mean, cops are everywhere in Vegas. I'm not gonna walk the different direction. That's too obvious. So I just go walking past these cops. And they get out of the car, and I'm like, oh, fuck. So I pop open my Rockstar and I take a sip, so just to kind of, hey, look, it's a real soda or whatever. And they come walking up. Now, the cop that was in the driver's seat got out after I passed the car and kind of started walking behind me. And the passenger got out right as I was clearing the car. And they were like, Jason. And I said, what? And time fucking froze. They said, let us talk to you. And like, everything I had ever heard just ran through my head. What do you mean, Jason? What the fuck does that mean? And the cops both walk up. One stays behind me, one stays in front of me. And they're like, where are you headed? I was like, oh, I'm just going to go over and get some snacks for my girl. No big deal. And I go to keep walking. And man, when I tell you fucking thud, dude, from behind, I get hit. I wasn't running, I wasn't resisting. All I said is, I'm going to get some candy for my girl. And I get hit from behind, and it knocks me down. And I see that fucking flick, that baton thing, the ones that the cops have that like extend out. And I see that extend out. Bah, dude, and I take one on the head. And I tell you right now, someday, if you guys ever see me somewhere, you'll see there's a dent. Right where I got hit with a chair when I was wrestling with Pee-wee at Putz's house, way back when, there's not a big flat spot, there's a flat spot in my skull, and right in the middle of that is a dot where this cop hit me with that baton. And when he hit me with that baton, everything went fucking crazy shaped. And I started like feeling like it was weird to breathe. And the next thing you know, I'm getting kicked and I'm getting punched. And it felt like there was 100 people beating my ass. And all I could do was just, after I got hit in the head, I just put my hands on my head and rolled my body up. And I took some shots. And I don't know if I was knocked out or passed out at all. I just know it feels like time went on forever. And the last thing I remember hearing before things went real dark was, Harris says hello. And I didn't consume that information until later. But by the time I got up, that car was gone and they were gone, obviously. And I get up and I get my bearings about me and I got some blood on my face and blood on my head and I'm kind of in bad shape. And I walk back to the suites and Cindy's like in a panic. First, she's in a panic just because she sees my silhouette walking up and they're outside. Where the fuck have you been? Blah, blah, blah. She was like really worried. And then I got close and she saw I was all fucked up. And that's when I started explaining to them, she and Joey and Ryan was there by this point. I even think KK might have been there by this point as well. But I started explaining what it was that had just happened. And it was at that point when I said, the last thing I remember them saying is, Harris says hi. And Cindy's eyes popped open hella big because I wasn't making the connection. One, my head was all fucked up, dude. I was a mess. And she was like, Officer Harris? Oh, shit, dude. Officer Harris? So the drug task force that was after me in California has notified Vegas that I'm here. I don't know that to be true. I don't know what else that could have meant. But what I know is I've got this guy Shade potentially left a pipe, a loaded pipe, which I don't leave loaded pipes around. Shit, I don't leave loaded pipes. But that's sitting in my house. I just got my ass beat by two cops. And the last thing I remember hearing is Harris says hello. The only thing that that could mean is that the cops in the Central Valley figured out where I was and called and let them know. But here's my other concern I have, you guys. All the dope that was in my Rockstar, all the dope was gone. The cops had taken the dope out of the bottom of my can, and the can was still there. I hadn't noticed that the bottom, I picked up my can, you know, I was stumbly and fucked up. Like this road that this happened on is super dark, super desolate, right on the other side of the fucking track. So it's not like I was just laying in some fucking busy road, nor was there enough light for me to realize that the bottom of my can was gone. How did these cops know where to look? So now my mind's fucking spinning. And I mean spinning hard, because on top of everything else, they knew where to look for my dope. They had to have wanted me to know that they knew, because otherwise they could have just took the can and left. You know what I mean? They opened it, they took the dope out, and then dropped the can and just left me there. It's not their first rodeo, right? Cops deal with fucking drug dealers all day long. So maybe they just checked, you know, on a hunch or on, you know, common practice. Yeah, how the fuck do I know why they checked that? But in my head, I was like, oh, these motherfuckers know everything. How do they know everything? Oh, it must be this guy. And I took that as a message that, you know, this guy Shade might be up to some shit. But I didn't share that with anybody. I didn't share the fact that I was putting all these pieces together. One, I didn't want to look like I wasn't maintaining control. You know, everybody wanted to take me to the hospital. I'm not going to the hospital. I'm not. One, I'm high as fuck. Two, I'm not explaining to anybody I got my ass beat by two cops. I'm not doing that. So we have to nurse my wounds as they sit. My chemical burn on my face, my fucking whatever happened to my head, my busted nose, the whole thing. It was nothing I could explain at a hospital, and I sure as fuck wasn't filing a police report on it. And so we clean me up, accept the loss, and just sit. Everybody sort of kind of continued their night and talked about what happened to me amongst themselves. You know, the conversations were happening around me. But Cindy and I sat very quiet that night. And it's like we were reflecting, like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on here? Vegas is a scary place, man. Scary things happen. Scary things happen everywhere. But for me, Vegas was. It was a place where death is a real option. I never really felt that in California, even though I was running around with some real serious and scary motherfuckers. In my head, California in the Central Valley, death was never an option for me. And for the first time, I really felt that death is on the table for my story. And it was a very scary and silent time. And silent is really the only way I can explain the way I felt, because, you know, the dope would quiet my mind, just like ADHD kids taking Adderall, right? My brain was super loud, but when I did meth, it was quiet. But now it was silent. And now I was, what do I do? You know what I mean? Like this is real, real. Like, I've heard about people snitching, I've heard about people getting arrested. Nobody I knew got their asses beat by cops, at least to my knowledge. I'm sure it's happened, but to my knowledge, it hadn't. And the only thing I kept telling myself is, well, buddy, this is the life you chose. So these are the rules you play by. And then I somehow convinced myself that it's okay. Like, you're alive. You made it through it, dude. You lived to tell another story and make another deal. But I wasn't going to let anybody see me slipping or scared or concerned, and I blew it off. And admittedly, I think that got me a little street cred, which it shouldn't have, because it's fucking scary and it's stupid and fucking it's weird the things that we praise other people for when you're running around in this dope game, because we're so fascinated by people that fucking can take a beating from cops and keep it moving, but you're not fascinated by the people that fucking just want to get sober and get the fuck out of their lives. You know what I mean? Like, the dope game is so ass backwards. That's the last time I saw Hero, and he put me up on some game and put me up on some rules. Because see, here's the thing, is the thing that I still live with as far as the rules he told me. If you have to use a whole bunch of bullets to solve your problem isn't probably as big as you think it is, right? Because if it's not important enough for you to get close to, then it's probably not that big of a deal. And while I don't apply that with bullets today, you know, there's days that I have that are bad and people that piss me off. And it makes me reflect on that moment, the times when I get mad now, because am I really mad? What am I going to do about it? Honestly, what am I going to do about it? Am I really that mad about it? Am I going to do nothing? Like that guy that just cut me off, am I going to get out at the light and beat his ass? No. Then stop being mad about it because it's not close enough to you. Yeah, he gave me some horrible advice as far as dealing with fucking shooting people, okay? But the reality is that the core of that rule is very life-affirming because now it takes me out of my own head when I get angry. What am I going to do about it? Nothing? Then shut the fuck up. It's not that big of a deal. So, hey, I did give some life lesson out of it, right? Listen, as usual, I appreciate everybody listening. I love it when people get a hold of me, man. I love it. Email me, mymadnessmethod819 at Gmail. You can get a hold of me Instagram. Please follow me. I'd appreciate the follows. I mean, honestly, most of my Instagram posts are just goofy shit, but every now and then, like, I put my new releases up and you know, there's some fun things on there, I guess. 819product.com. That's the word 8, numbers 19, wordproduct.com. You can check that out. We update that as often as possible. Keep up to date on some other speaking engagements I have. Until the next time, my name is Jason Farias, and this is my Madness Method.